Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle.
Hello, John. It's been just a bit.
We've had a little break, Ed, but it's good to hear from you.
It's great to be back together and talking immunizations. It's been fun. I will say that I went out and got my second booster and did find the pharmacy to be a little less hectic as it was in previous visits. Not saying that things are relaxing at all in the pharmacies, just looks a little more calm. Maybe they're just getting used to it. Who knows?
Well, I am scheduled to have my second booster on May 9th. In fact, I just scheduled it today. So great minds think alike.
Yes, sir. So, John, to that point, there's talk about mix and match. Of course, I got my primary doses and my first booster was all brand X. When I got my second booster, I switched to brand Y. Was that a smart thing to do, do you think? And the literature says you should or you could. What are your thoughts there, John?
You know, I think there are probably a couple of schools of thought on that. I think you're correct. I think some people are recommending, like, if you got Moderna the first with the initial series and certainly with your first booster, that you switch to Pfizer for the second booster. When I called to make my appointment today, the pharmacist said, well, John, you got Moderna the first three times. We have Moderna in stock. And I asked that same question, and she seemed to think it was fine to go ahead and stick with the Moderna. You know, it's probably six of one, a half dozen the other. I mean, I think the prevailing thought about switching is that you might get a little bit more coverage. Hopefully by the time of getting the second booster, you ought to have pretty good coverage anyway. So it's probably not a big deal. And it's certainly not a big deal to me because I went ahead and scheduled the appointment to get Moderna for my second booster.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of patients, and you know, half of the battle of being overwrought with patients at the counter is if you're overwrought with an array of additional questions, it does take extra time. So just preparing our pharmacy audience with this information is important, and addressing it, I think it's our responsibility that is one of the things that they might be experiencing, even though volume is lower and things have seemed to settle a bit. But it's always quiet before the storm. You know that, John? We've seen that many, many times.
Yep. I mean, there's always another variant around the corner. You know, the other thing going on right now, with in addition to the boosters, I think pharmacies are awaiting word from the FDA regarding the authorization for the five and under population.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then, you know, Ed, it's not too early to begin thinking about seasonal flu. I mean, folks begin, you know, getting their, they probably already placed their orders, their pre-orders, and looking to begin sometime in early fall. So there's a lot to think about in terms of workflow when it comes to immunizations these days.
Yes. And didn't I just say it seems to be a bit quieter now because it's the quiet before what could be the storm? Oh, my. Yeah, they did push. I read today that they pushed under the five and under discussions back to June.
That's exactly right. I was going to say June is what I'm hearing, and you know, we'll look forward to that authorization.
Yes, and then I was also reading today that we'll have a new entry into the COVID vaccine market soon, with Novavax coming to the United States with their vaccine.
Yeah, and I think there's probably going to be a pretty good market for that, Ed. I think that vaccine is a protein-based vaccine. It's not the messenger RNA vaccine that some people seemed be concerned about, that have a little hesitancy about. So I think that's going to be a pretty good market for those folks that have those types of concern. And I know vaccine hesitancy is going to be our primary topic of conversation today. So maybe that's a good segue.
Yes, it is. And you know, John, it's interesting how, you know, when we started just a few short months ago with our podcast, and we addressed vaccine hesitancy and vaccine confidence, they had very succinct and direct implications. You were hesitant to get a shot, or you were very confident to go and get your shots. But what we're seeing today is that hesitancy has taken on a second meaning. And now with all of the discussions around immunizations and vaccines and different things, we are seeing that people are not rushing back to catch up on missed immunizations. And hesitancy in some of my conversations and discussions with people has taken on a meeting where patients are making decisions to get certain vaccines and have hesitancy only around other vaccines. So they would come and get their flu shot, but then the pharmacy team would offer a second vaccine and they would decline it because they're hesitant to go in a different direction other than flu. And that's just a loose example, by the way. So, you know, I'm not sure what you're reading or hearing, but having our patients feel empowered to make decisions on which vaccines are right for them, it's going to play havoc on the reemergence of some of these diseases. And it's concerning.
You know, Ed, it's a big concern. And, you know, I kind of like to talk about this in terms of the effect that the hesitancy regarding COVID vaccine is having on routine vaccinations. That you could also, we've heard the term long COVID. Well, that may be the long-term effect of COVID that other vaccines, other immunizations suffer. I know the pediatric community, school nurses, a lot of public health experts are really worried that preventable and, you know, in some cases, fatal childhood illnesses, once thought to be a thing of the past, are going to rear their ugly head again just because folks are not getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of concern out there. And I think pharmacists are in a really, you know, as a destination for immunizations, as we've seen during COVID, pharmacists are really in a very key and important position to try to encourage folks to get those routine vaccinations.
You know, this is where, you know, we talked in our last two episodes, we brought in Christina Madison. We talked about the implications and the partnership with public health, you know, teaming up with public health, pharmacy and public health together. I think we really need a partner in this crusade to really tell that story and to help us to get patients into the pharmacy. We still struggle with the 19 to 64 year old cohort. We did a great job over the last 2 years demonstrating to that group of individuals that pharmacy is the destination. They can come with confidence and get immunized. And now this new message, catching up on your missed vaccines, getting yourself to the point where you have a destination for immunization services. For those that don't come to the pharmacy often, they're not having us remind them.
Exactly.
I'm advocating that public health is got to be our great friend and help us to tell our story, get our message out there, and relieve some of the burden on themselves in public health by utilizing pharmacy as a partner.
Well, you know, Ed, I think one of the big learnings of the past few years, and certainly, you know, one of the more positive developments was the relationship, the close working relationship that pharmacy developed with public health, whether it be local jurisdictions or state health departments. I think the reliance on pharmacy's reliance on public health and public health reliance on pharmacy was really showcased. And I think, you know, as evident as that was during the pandemic, it may be even more important moving ahead as, you know, we try to craft consistent messages to encourage folks to that it's still really, really important to come in and get vaccinated for these for these preventable diseases. And I think if we can put out messages to encourage people to come to the pharmacy, you mentioned a few minutes ago that people are being selective in terms of what vaccines they get. If we can get them in for one or two vaccines, hopefully the pharmacist or the physician or pediatrician can have an impact on them in terms of the other vaccines that they really need.
You know, one of the things that's concerning is some of what's in the press today. When President came out back on a State of the Union address and talked about test and treat in pharmacies, and the American Medical Association did not endorse or was not excited about having pharmacy as a partner in that realm, you know, that does flow over in the minds of our patients and the broader community, that and puts doubt back in the minds of people that is pharmacy that place for these types of services. And it's very unfortunate that, as the pandemic has demonstrated so clearly, the capabilities of pharmacy, that still to this day, as we start to come out and loosen up a bit post-pandemic, I'll go post-pandemic seriousness, that the AMA is still thinking that we're not their friends. And that's discerning.
It's very concerning, and it's a shame that, you know, we continue to experience turf issues between professions, in spite of the fact that we're still trying to overcome a very, very serious health crisis. I will say this: I think by and large, the average physician really is in favor of working with pharmacies or with pharmacists. I think they're stretched. You know, they've got serious workload issue, and I think they welcome partnerships with their pharmacy counterparts. It's the national organization that is continuing to throw up walls. But I think if you would talk to the average community physician, they relish the opportunity to work with their pharmacy counterparts.
You know, to that point, when I go off for my annual physical and such, I always do it in the fall. And my doctor, clearly, his first question is, have you gotten your shots at your pharmacy? And if you haven't, I could give them to you today. But if you'd like to go to your pharmacy, that's okay. I mean, he really is doing a nice job promoting pharmacy. And this is part of a large metropolitan health system here in the Chicagoland area. So if that's the clear message that they're sending to their patients, they are, to your point, truly embracing pharmacy as a destination.
Well, they are. And I think the fact that they mentioned pharmacy first when they ask you if you've gotten your vaccination, I think that speaks volumes. The other thing, I mean, kind of along the same lines, if you pay attention to these consumer ads, and I think maybe Shingrix is the one that I'm thinking about, they end the message with, if you've got questions, talk to your pharmacist or other healthcare provider or physician. So
yes,
he's front and center, really, when you think about immunizations these days.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that one where they talk to your pharmacist or your doctor. I think, yep, I remember one that I saw recently. You know, it's healthcare. This is, you know, as we always talk, and as I proudly wear all these gray hairs on the top of my head, I've learned through those years, you know, that you got nothing unless you got your health. And to politicize health services and healthcare and the provision of basic health services is just, it's just wrong.
Well, it's really to the detriment of health and public health. I know one thing I've noticed lately is a number of states have introduced bills to limit vaccinations, including one that really would have ended immunization requirements in schools. And a number of states are considering similar pieces of legislation. So we really need to be mindful of what's going on in various states who are looking at things that are really gonna, for lack of a better word, undermine, you know, public health.
Oh gosh, boy, John, we did say the quiet before the storm, and it's going to be, you know, things used to be a little simpler and easier and coming into the fall season and such. But with all this, you know, we've always said, if you've seen one state's pharmacy practice regulations, you've seen one state. And now it's even getting more complicated because states are changing up and changing rules along the way for different age groups. And oh my, we really need to, in a future episode, focus on resources for pharmacists and states to get that kind of information as these rules and regulations change. Because I think between your organization and mine, I think we need to make sure we do a yeoman's effort to make sure this information gets out to our constituents.
Yeah, Ed, you gave me an opening there, and I'll capitalize on it. I mean, NCPA has been very focused on what's going on in the states. We've got a state advocacy team as well as a federal advocacy team, and we're really focused on, you know, trying to not take a step back from the authorizations that were granted under the PREP Act. And, you know, we're so much in favor of access to all immunizations, and we feel very, very strongly that pharmacy should be a destination for vaccines. We think immunizations should be, and we're definitely headed in that direction, should be a core competency for community pharmacy. And, you know, it's a big point of emphasis for our organization these days.
I will also add that I spent a lot of time in chain pharmacy, and in my discussions with those organizations that I'll call them the big six chains, they're also focused on that exact effort and supporting the efforts of NACDS, APHA, and NCPA, because it's to the benefit of all pharmacy to, you know, provide these services and be a healthcare destination for their patients. And as much as I'm not going down the rabbit hole of why pharmacy has its stressors, you know, we're not crossing the road. We're staying on this side. There's a lot of stress to why pharmacy is a stressful place. There's a lot of reasons for that. But I will say that the chains are very focused on advancing the profession. As much as NCPA supports the independent community pharmacy, the chains are equally as focused on enhancing practice and driving change to move the technician to a role as a career role to manage the pharmacy and let the pharmacists go across to those health hubs, as I'll call them, and practice at the top of their experience and their education.
Yeah, we're gonna stay in the middle of the road today. I've always liked the expression, rising tide raises all boats, and certainly when everybody focuses on the patient and the services that we can provide to patients, I think we all benefit. I know our organization, NCPA, is very much involved with the Community Pharmacy Enhanced Services Networks. We just had our mid-year meeting down in North Carolina a couple of weeks ago, and CPESN is our way to try to change the pharmacy payment model, which, you know, I think we've come up with a topic for another podcast, Ed. I think the pharmacy payment model has been broken, and it has been broken for a long time. And, you know, our CPSN is our effort to try to change that. But, you know, would love to focus in on that as a topic for a future podcast.
Ooh, that might be several podcasts. You know, another thing that's really come to the forefront, and as we're in this more relaxed phase where COVID, of course, has plateaued a bit, the immunization fury is not as strong. Flu's kind of over for now. The flu vaccines, I'm sure there's a few stragglers, but, you know, pharmacy is now focusing in a bit on travel health. They're focusing in and getting ready for back to school immunizations as we get into the summer months. And then ACIP came out with the new recommendations for some vaccines to be provided to patients with chronic disease. I'll use patients with diabetes and hepatitis B as the example there. And another level of need to understand by our patients, another level of explanation that our pharmacy teams will have to offer. You know, it just, it's another layer on there. I 100% endorse because there's many diseases that require patients to be up to date with their immunizations. Our job is, of course, to recognize patients that don't understand or don't know. We need to succinctly address those that don't believe and change that uptake from very, very low to at least half to more.
Exactly. I mean, you know, just think about the average pharmacy ad. I mean, how many people with diabetes does average community pharmacy have in their database, in their patient file? And what an opportunity to encourage those patients to get vaccinated for hepatitis B. You know, the other thing is, just think about how many people go out to eat these days. I mean, if you go out to eat at a restaurant, if you travel, you really need to be vaccinated with hepatitis B vaccine. It's almost a universal indication. Again, it's a huge opportunity for pharmacy to provide a value-added service to their patients.
Well, I'll tell you, back in the day, John, as we have discussed, to immunize, we had to be protected for hepatitis and had to get our Hep B series. Later on, I traveled abroad and to some countries, and I got my Hep A series as well. We as healthcare professionals are protected and we do understand, but now it's our turn to articulate and help our patients understand. And again, you know, the majority of these people that fit this category are the 19 to 64 year olds. And we're right back full circle with now another need for patients in that age group to come into the pharmacy for an additional service.
One of these days, Ed, we keep doing this podcast, you're going to have to say way back in the day rather than back in the day.
Well, you know, we could probably say way back in the day. If we added up all the years of immunization experience between us, you know, we've got a lot of years of experience here.
So, Ed, I'm going to pose a question for you. Now, if we've got a couple of minutes, you know, there are new guidelines regarding pneumococcal disease. I know there's some new vaccines out. What can you tell us regarding that? And can we? There's always seemed to be some confusion around, you know, which vaccine do I need? When do I need to get it? Can you simplify things for us?
Well, I think our good friends at ACIP did us a great service and came out with new guidelines. Very simplified guidelines that if you have a patient 65 or older that has not received their pneumo immunizations and they come into you first time, you can embrace one of two paths. If you embrace the Pfizer Prevnar 20, it's a single shot. It's, and if I may say, it's a one and done. Or if you'd like to offer a bit additional coverage, you can move them to the two-shot series with the Merck vaccines, Vaxneuvance, and Pneumovax. And those would be provided as two distinct opportunities a year apart. There is no need to repeat a pneumococcal series for any patient that had received it in the past. So as you and I have talked, we both have gotten our pneumococcal series in the past, and we do not need any of these new vaccines for ourselves going forward. So I can't imagine it getting any simpler than that.
Well, that, and I think Pharmacy Times has a CE series, and one of the topics has to do with pneumococcal disease. That's addressed in that program.
Yes, it is.
I'll give you a plug.
Well, thank you so much. But I will say that the important thing to remember is the magic number for pneumococcal vaccinations is 65 years of age. So all people 65 and older need to have protection against pneumococcal. For folks with chronic disease in that 19 to 64 year old cohort, folks with certain chronic disease, they should also be immunized with pneumococcal. If you're a smoker, you should also be immunized for that, regardless of age, in that 19 to 64 year old cohort. And just remember that if they were immunized previously under the age of 65, with pneumococcal vaccine, there should be that five-year gap before embracing the over 65 requirements.
Yeah, that's good to know. And again, I think ACIP is doing a good job of trying to simplify the guidelines. I know a lot of times pharmacies will get calls from the medical community with, you know, questions. They're not sure, you know, what the specific indications are. So they're asking pharmacy or pharmacists for help in making sure they're referring them to the pharmacy, or they're providing the vaccine there. They want to make sure their patients are getting the correct one.
Yes. And I will tell you that right now, as I read in the literature, there is ongoing studies in this area of pneumococcal vaccines, where there is development of additional vaccines. I think Pfizer and Merck are both doing work ongoing, and there might be some updates to these vaccines in the not too distant future. We'll be sure to bring you that information as it becomes available as well.
Yeah, I think pneumococcal disease is one of those really preventable diseases that there's still a lot of work to do in terms of boosting up immunization rates. I know we've done a pretty good job with some of the other vaccines. Influenza, of course, comes to mind, but when it comes to pneumococcal disease, I think there's still some opportunities, certainly with the people over the age of 65, but in terms of folks that are outside of that age group that may also be at risk, such as your smokers or people with chronic respiratory problems, you know, things of that nature.
I agree 100%. So, John, as we, you know, if you needed to leave the audience with one thought today, just a loaded question, by the way, I do apologize. If there was one good pearl of wisdom to share with the audience to help them in some way to balance craziness in the pharmacy, what would that be?
You know, I think it's tough to, you're right, it's a loaded question. Tough to convey one thought. And I know it's certainly easy for you and I to sit here on our Tuesday afternoon podcast to say, you know, this is what you should do. I don't want to be characterized as doing that, but I think there's so many opportunities for pharmacists to have a positive impact in healthcare today. Obviously, we've done a lot to showcase our value during a very, very difficult healthcare crisis of the last 2 years. As you mentioned in your introduction, we seem to be coming out of that. We seem to have plateaued a little bit, but there's always going to be a need for pharmacist involvement in public health. It's what we do. We're the most accessible healthcare provider. We're the most accessible public healthcare provider. So there's always going to be a public health need, maybe not necessarily a crisis, but there's going to be a public health need. And I think it's important that we continue to work to satisfy that need, continue to be active within our state and national associations who are advocating on our behalf. And, you know, we continue to try to be active legislative and politically, because in today's world, that's really, really important.
But I think you hit the most important aspects there. You know, balance is for us to say you have to balance, you know, your time in the pharmacy and your activities. Workflow is so key and important. Having people with defined roles and responsibilities, all of those types of things help to relieve some of that ongoing stress and tension. Being involved on the flip side, being involved in your state and national associations is so, so important. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that we need to pick up as a theme and remind people each and every episode that if they're frustrated for any reason with the profession of pharmacy, the number one place that they need to go to vent that frustration and get their voices heard is their state association and their national associations. Getting involved there is the single place where the activity is happening today. And those groups need to represent all of pharmacy. I strongly encourage, and I know you and I both are active and members of our state association and national associations, not only because you work there, but I think you would be active there even if you didn't work there.
Yeah, agree with you on that, Ed, 100%. I think, you know, we're going to continue to be cheerleaders for involvement in our respective associations, both nationally and locally on the state level. That's really, really important.